Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop. Fun.
It's Big Love, Pop Art, and Fun Times from the Wilson World Studios in California, USA. It's Big Pop Fun. Here's Tom Wilson.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson. I am Tom Wilson, your lovely, tall, powerful, manly host. Thanks. Hey, welcome to another magical sleigh ride of enchantment and wonder as we put down our resentments of the past, our angers, our little bitternesses that we collect during the day, and we put them down and we kick our horses into a new gear and a new day where we could pick up new resentments and angers and bitterness and try to get rid of it over a process. Hey, we're all just human beings. It's a process, right? We're trying, man, because hard to get rid of them and just not collect any, isn't it? All you have to do is get behind the wheel of a car. Boom, whole new set, little wicker basket right next to me of bitterness and resentment that you try to, yeah. Okay, welcome. The podcast, hey, let's talk about our sponsors. Our sponsors are art. Support the arts by buying art. Go out and go to an art show this summer. Pick up a piece of art. Go to Etsy. Everyone makes fun of it. I know. But man, look, people make earrings and things that are, they're really neat things. And you buy something for someone and you give it to them for their birthday. And they say, wow, that's really a neat thing. Instead of saying, I got you a Jamba Juice gift card. Oh, thank you. I was going to, you know, buy my Jamba Juice anyway, I guess. But now I have a little card with the Jamba Juice logo to just give me more. I'll go to the powerhouse size or whatever that, you know, that huge size of Jamba Juice. I don't know who gets that, because that middle thing, Jamba, that's about it for me. I can put away some Jamba Juice. Frozen strawberries, I don't sweat frozen strawberries or power boosting. But the middle Jamba Juice, that's a whole lot of smoothie, isn't it? But then, you know, they have that Gigundo trash can Jamba Juice. And I went, wow, that's somebody's getting a lot of citrus kapow or whatever. Anyway, it's also brought to you by my book, The Masked Man. If you haven't read it, please check it out on iPad, Kindle, The Nook. It's a memoir and fantasy of Hollywood. That's its subtitle, I guess. The Masked Man is the name, and Tom Wilson is the writer. Yeah, that's me with the adjectives. It's me storytelling about my illustrious and moderately successful career. And I actually meet, run into, and befriend the actor Clayton Moore, who played the Lone Ranger in the television series of the 1950s and who has been dead for over 10 years. We go on quite an adventure and learn something about each other and ourselves. I know, I just went for something. I like the high wire in writing. I like it. I like the esoteric joke in the act. You know, in other words, the one that doesn't work, but I like. So I leave it in a little too long as everyone begins to go, I wonder why Tom is still singing that song that just doesn't go over that well. I like it. I am on the Paramount lot. I am on the, yes, Paramount Pictures. I wish I had a lot of sound cues, because I would do the whole ba-da-ba-da-ba-da, hooray for Hollywood, and then I would say I'm on the Paramount lot. But the funny thing about it is everyone sings that hooray for Hollywood, ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba, hooray for Hollywood, and then they don't know, and they go ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba, Hollywood, because they really don't know what they're saying hooray about. But there are some hooray things about Hollywood. Now, I'm on the Paramount lot, and I'm not allowed to say why, because there are signs everywhere now that say, no tweeting about this project, no Facebook statuses, no photography, no pictures, no anything, no recording, no stuff. I mean, I can record in the privacy of my dressing room, but other than that, no recording. Although they sell tours to the Paramount lot now, so I'm not allowed to tweet or Facebook or photograph anything, but the group of 15 tourists that are, you know, standing next to me as I'm walking into the soundstage, apparently they are, because they're taking pictures. And I have nothing against that. Hey, I say, have a good time. Come on in. Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da, hooray for Hollywood. Paramount. Am I? I think I started too fast. I think I'm talking too fast because I'm afraid they're going to knock on the door and call me back to my illustrious, you know, role in this show with Scott Baio. Yes, I can say that. I'll say that. I don't even care if they get me in trouble because by the time this comes out, I'll be off the show, which is true of many shows that I'm on. It's a very, very brief window where I can talk about it because it's basically one episode and that's done. Scott Baio is involved with the show. He is the star of the show. I'm sure, I don't know, but I'm sure he's a producer or something. And if there's one thing that we know about a Scott Baio TV show, it's excitement and a veil of secrecy that we are not allowed to talk about. But I'm on the Paramount lot working again. You know, the Paramount lot is really, it's nice. I'm right next to this street on the back lot of Paramount. And you've seen them in movies and everything with the big sort of beige, yellowy sound stages, the big buildings. And on this one, it says Stage 19. On that one, Stage 21. I wonder what movie was shot in that one. And Paramount has a lot of historic stages. I mean, Paramount has an entire street that was used in the movie Sunset Boulevard with Gloria Swanson and William Holden. He played a young Hollywood screenwriter. And you could see the office right on the Paramount lot that was his office. And when Gloria Swanson came in her big limousine, convertible limousine, to speak to I think Louis B. Mayer, or was it Cecil B. DeMille? I think it was Cecil B. DeMille. Yeah, it was. And she talks to him and she demands that he comes out. And anyway, you're walking in Hollywood history when you're on the Paramount lot. And my dressing room is right on this street. And it's a gentle incline up the hill because Hollywood, at the edge of Hollywood, it kind of goes up into the Hollywood Hills, oddly enough. And from my vantage point, I see up this street and there is gigantic Stage 30, Stage 31. And above that is the dusty hills of Hollywood with some palm trees. And I'm not kidding you, folks. The Hollywood sign right above it. So I'm at the perfect intersection in Hollywood. I mean, look at that thing with little golf carts and people running by and people have. Now, it's not like 1952. Wouldn't that be great? Because in 1952 or 37 or whenever it was they were making those movies, there would be Roman centurions walking down the street. Oh, and there's a limousine, an old time limousine with Shirley Temple going down, and it would be, you know, all that old time Hollywood. Oh, there's Charlie Chaplin or whatever. But it's not like that. Now it's just golf carts, you know, because there's not a lot of historic things being made in Hollywood. We're just, you know, we're just doing kind of sequels and TV shows, which are fine. But Paramount is one of the historic ones. Anyway, I can't believe sometimes that I get to do this. I mean, I didn't, you know, I've told you about being from Philadelphia and all that stuff, but my impression of Hollywood has always been where my the way that I try to communicate it, and I think I've tried to do that on the podcast, is to say, which is true, hey, I'm just a regular guy from Philadelphia who was acting in shows and did stand-up comedy in these little nightclubs and stuff and said, well, I'm going to move to California and just, you know, I'm just going to try. So I tried and I end up on a street in a dressing room and looking up at Stage 30, Stage 31 with the Hollywood sign, with the in my head. I can't believe it. But I mean, I'm not a VIP here. Don't get me wrong. I have a very, you know, a modest dressing room that they give to actors like myself, who usually play a guy named Man 2, or, you know, guy in convenience store, whatever. Just with my kind of, hey, character actor, I've talked about it on the podcast. The thing, hey, just know the lines, be on time, deliver the goods, you know, recognize when there's a joke in the script, put a little English on it, you know what I mean? And we'll give you free snacks. Free snack. Hey, look at those red vines. Bucket of red vines? Go for it. We have muffin tops this morning. Have at it. But you know VIP, so stay in line, be on time. And don't be temperamental, or there are, you know, 60 guys just outside the gates, the very heavily secure gates of the lot who are waiting. Boy, the lots are very secure now, as you can imagine. Universal, they used to be kind of open, you know, they used to be kind of like one guy at the front gate. He was 72 years old. Scotty was over at Universal, a bunch of guys, you know, Bubs, those kinds of nicknames of the guy. You know, just a few guys in golf carts running around. Now it has to be very secure. In fact, you know, very sadly, many years ago, for the first time they sort of started getting extra security. A crazy guy went up to the gate at Universal and actually he had a, you know, crazy guy, and he had a gift for Michael Landon, and the security guard quite rightly wouldn't let him in to see Michael Landon, and the man shot the security guard whom I knew, and killed him, unfortunately. So anyway, as we can imagine, hey, security has gotten tight, and after 9/11, very, very tight. So there are many layers of security, and you, showing your identification and parking in this place and all that kind of thing. Anyway, and for a non-VIP like myself, it's a lot of identification and just to come in and play guy in convenience store, or just say, you know, the x-rays have come in, Dr. Johnson. Anyway, I've been a VIP before, though. I played a VIP. I was a VIP. I was a VIP. I was a VIP. I told you in Big Pop Fun episode 1, I told you about being a VIP at the Universal Studios Florida grand opening. When they opened Universal and Back to the Future was a Universal thing, and I went there in order to, you know, to open the park, and I was the MC of a couple of the big events there. But the park was not ready to open at all. Everything was broken. The King Kong ride was broken. I was on the King Kong ride as it broke, and it took forever to get myself and Sylvester Stallone, no kidding, and a bunch of people, and Robert Wall. Robert Wall, myself, Sylvester Stallone, and a number of other international superstars were stuck on the King Kong ride together. They had a Jaws ride that was not able to open. It just never opened. It was kind of a raft. You were riding on a raft and going through some, I don't know, some oceany area. And then a shark comes up, bites the raft. The raft starts deflating. The raft starts sinking. The shark lifts the raft up in its teeth and kind of and rips the raft back and forth. Oh, we're sinking. The shark's going to kill us. Well, they spent a lot of money. And that raft, the Jaws ride, just never opened. So anyway, so I was there. I was in Orlando, and I went to Disney. I went to Disney World back then as a VIP with the person who takes you to the rides, and you get to sneak on and stuff. It's the only time I've ever done it. I had two kids, two little ones, and so we went there, and it was terrific, just getting on the rides and having a wonderful, wonderful time. And the people at Disney were very, very very nice. Well, the workers at Disney, the executives at well, let's not talk about them right now. But we got to see the Electric Light Parade in the VIP section, which is amazing. At that time, I don't know if they do it anymore, but Disney World had the Electric Light Parade, which was an entire parade through Disney World, and all the floats, all of the characters that we know and love are covered in lights, like white Christmas lights or colored little Christmas lights or LEDs. And they were just – it was really very beautiful. And all of the floats had speakers, and all of the speakers were, I guess, connected to each other, because all of Disney World played the music as the parade went through Disney World. So they have a little hitch, a little turn where the Electric Light Parade turns in order to, I think in order to have VIP benches, but in order to fix up things if they break, or to fix wheels on things, or, you know, to fix Fievel's head, whatever. So there we are. They usher us past the velvet ropes to this little turn where the crowd can't see. And there's Jane Seymour and her family. She was down there, I suppose, for the Universal opening or something, or some, you know, I don't know, doing the Open Hearts collection for Kay Jewelers, whatever. She was designing jewelry and there with her children, and she was on a park bench next to us, and we're on this park bench, and wow, we're being so VIP-ish. And there's the Electric Light Parade, and it comes by, and every character is waving to each of the kids. And I mean, Chip and Dale and the Rescue Rangers are shaking every kid's hand for the VIP section, and Pluto is pointing at them and waving, and it's just gorgeous. And trombone players are high-fiving them, and everything is happening. And it's just, we're having an out-of-body Disney experience. Wow. This VIP thing is the best thing I've ever seen. Well, daddy, me, I look around the corner and here comes Cinderella. I have two daughters, two little daughters sitting there on the bench. Girls, Cinderella's coming. Oh, well, Cinderella is coming and she's got a huge gown. You know, the Cinderella gown. And it spreads out with her petticoats and everything. And it's covered in white lights, all twinkling. There must be a light every 3 or 4 inches. It really was a beautiful outfit. And the light, there's a lot of lights on her outfit because her skirt was very big. And here comes Cinderella, girls. Get ready because she's going to be, and Cinderella's going to shake her their hand. And they're going to see Cinderella. And Cinderella comes up and she's waving to the crowd, waving to the crowd. Then she turns the corner. As soon as she's out of view of the audience and in that little hitch section, she starts grabbing her back saying, "It's burning me. It's burning me. The dress is burnt. It's burning me." And a bunch of workers just run up to her and they had a big battery pack on her back to power all those lights. And I guess the battery shorted out and this poor Cinderella was really having a hard time. So these worker guys grab Cinderella and they're taking the battery pack and they're unscrewing this, they're unscrewing the wire and they put on a new battery pack and she's, and my girls, "Cinderella, Cinderella," they're waving at her and she's trying to go, get it off me. And so, I mean, these worker guys, they reattach new battery pack, get it going, put it in her back, but they're keeping her moving along with the parade because she's getting about 8 feet behind the coach, the lit up coach, the pumpkin coach with all the mice, or she, you know, it's like, come on, come on. And that, hey, God bless that Cinderella girl, because, I mean, they reconnected that battery, plugged it in, the lights went on. They gave her a nice friendly shove back into the parade route. She turned the corner just as we see her. She gets in front of people and beams a huge smile and starts waving to everybody again. A beautiful experience. But anyway, I went back to Disney. I was just back in Disney. I was in Orlando. Recently. Thanks to everybody who listens to the podcast for coming out to the Orlando Improv there and telling me that you listen to the podcast. I appreciate it very much. And we had great shows there. Most of the shows were sold out. A lot of people came. We had a lot of fun. And I returned to Disney World as a VIP. Well, not a real VIP, kind of a fake VIP, because my friend James Arnold Taylor, who's been a guest on this podcast, if you haven't listened to his conversation with me, check it out because it's really interesting. One of the premier voiceover talents in all of show business, and he does Obi-Wan Kenobi in the Clone Wars as well as many, many other voices. And he is the host of the Star Wars Weekends at Disney World, which happened last month. So he calls me and says, "You have to come over here." Because, you guys should know, in an infinitesimally small way, I am involved, or I am from the Star Wars phenomena, only if you have an electron Star Wars microscope, because I am a microscopic part of Star Wars. I was voices in a game called The Old Republic. Sorry about that. It's called The Old Republic. I did voices on a thing called Star Wars Detours, which will never see the light of day, apparently. Or it may. I don't know. I don't know what the state of it is, but that's almost as top secret as a Scott Baio TV show on Paramount. But I was a small part of the Star Wars world. So James, my friend, says, "You have to come over there." So the nice Disney people pick me up. And I go over there, and I was late because I had to do morning radio to promote my improv weekend. So I was late. I couldn't be in the parade. Darn it. I was ready to be electrocuted with the Cinderella. But it was right in time to see my friend James waving to the crowd and then get up on stage and sing a song. which was wonderful because he sang with R2-D2 and a guy in a Chewbacca suit, everything, and there were stormtroopers there. And at the end of the song, James has this big pose with a lightsaber and says, "Behind the Force!" Ah! You know, like very show busy, and fireworks go off and whatever. And I just told him it was such a wonderful thing to see because now for the rest of his life, I can always remind him that he was on stage with R2-D2 and a bunch of stormtroopers singing "Behind the Force" like that for Star Wars weekend. Anyway, there were very nice people. I mean, they had a Peter Mayhew who played Chewbacca. He was there. Sam Witwer, who does Darth Maul's voice on Clone Wars. Ashley Eckstein was there. Ashley is wonderful, a voiceover actress, and she has a line of clothing for girls, for young ladies, called Her Universe. Look that up on Twitter because it's really neat stuff. Anyway, and I met her husband, David Eckstein, who I recognized, but I thought he was a comedian or somebody I knew. I know that guy, David Eckstein, and he was there. Really nice guy. Turns out it was David Eckstein, the baseball player, who was a magnificent baseball player, was the MVP of the 2006 World Series, I think, with the Cardinals. A wonderful baseball. So I'm recognizing him. What kind of way do I – are you in show business? Are you a Disney person? No, I'm David. I was playing baseball. But I'm horrible at that. I'm the worst. I've been in so many embarrassing situations with not recognizing people. I haven't recognized, like, movie stars. And I've actually said, "Oh, are you involved in the entertainment industry?" You know, whatever. I did that to when ER was a huge TV show. I did that to Noah Wiley. I really did. "Oh, Noah, very nice to meet you." Pardon me. "Nice to meet you, Noah. What do you do?" "Oh, I'm an actor." "Oh, well, good for—" and I'm being all patronizing. "Oh, good for you. Hey, Noah, how's that working out?" Really. I said, "Well, okay. I'm doing all right. I mean, you know, I'm on a TV show." "You are? Wow. Would I have heard of it?" "Well, to ER. Hey, well, that, I mean, that's a hit show." And somebody's like, "Tom, he's a big TV star. Would you stop?" So, I mean, I was filming the show Ed in New York. It was a very good show with the wonderful Tom Cavanaugh. And I meet a guy on the set. Nice guy. I figure he's an electrician from Jersey City who knows somebody on the set. So I'm being all patronizing. "Todd. Oh, good to meet you, Todd." "Yeah. Yeah. Your first time on a set?" "No, no. Huh? What do you do for a living, Todd?" He says, "I play baseball." And it didn't even register to me. I went, what do you mean? You play baseball?" He says, "Well, I play baseball. I actually went to, oh, I guess Todd is a little special needs. He likes to play baseball as a hobby or something." So I'm going, "Well, good for you. That's good. Play baseball. I mean, what kind of baseball do you play?" He says, I'm Todd Zeile. I play third base for the Mets." I go, oh, you mean you were really a baseball player? "I'm Todd Zeile. Sure, I've heard of you on the Mets, Todd Zeile. Sure." So I'm always that guy. But Disney treated me very well, and we had a lot of fun. And I went up on stage, and we improvised with Sam Witwer and Ashley Eckstein and James, and we had a lot of fun. A lot of fun. It was a great weekend. So I thank all of those and the Disney people who always treated me well when I was there. The executives, less so. Well, I used to host this thing called the THEA Awards, the Themed Entertainment Association, and they got me to host these awards. You know, nice gig, big corporate gig. They say, "And Tom, we would like you to write 5 minutes of specific material related to theme parks, to themed entertainment, that kind of thing. So when you're ready, stand up. What are you doing?" I mean, not that I was Don Rickles or something, but you skewer it a little. You have fun with it. And the first year, I told a bunch of funny stories about the opening of Universal and how this was broken. And I was, you know, doing material like that. Went over like gangbusters. Oh, my gosh, you have to come back. Went back the next year. At that point, Paramount was trying to do a theme park in Legoland. And I was skewering them. Oh, fantastic, Tom. Next year. I'm running out of topics. So you know, I go after Disney a little bit. I make fun of, I just made fun of this little flashlight that they sell at Disneyland and how it doesn't help children read or tell stories. It just spins in place and does nothing. And whatever, costs $12 and it's broken by the time you get to your car. And I poked fun at them for California Adventure, which had just opened. They were apoplectic. By the end of my little introductory thing, and by the time, you know, I did 5 minutes on theme parks and probably 6 or 7 minutes of regular stand-up, there were a bunch of Disney executive guys in tuxedos, absolutely purple-faced with the whole, get him off the stage, get a big hook, we need a big hook, like in, you know, like in the Three Stooges, turn off the microphone. And they were absolutely apoplectic, and I lost the gig. I mean, I wasn't asked back, and they just had me. But I'll tell you, that stand-up comedy part of me, I don't think I've ever driven home happier from a gig. I don't know. It was just fun and funny. The crowd went crazy. I upset a bunch of millionaires in tuxedos. That's a good day for me, people. That is a good day. You know, when I did a benefit in Arizona, and this old governor was there, Rose. So she had huge hair, huge beehive hairdo, gigantic. They said, don't mention the governor's hair, no matter what you do. She's very sensitive about it. Don't mention it. And what do I – it's a politician. I'm not – you know, so I go out and I say, well, I'm sorry I was a little late because I got lost – coming to the venue, and you know, I pulled around initially, but I accidentally, you know, I mistook for a parking structure. I pulled into the governor's hair with my car. It's still whatever. I designed the joke better than that. Got a huge laugh, and this lady stared at me with these dead. She was like in the second row. I mean, if she had a gun, and it was Arizona, so that's a pretty good bet. But boy, she hated me. And she came up and told me afterwards. You know, those Arizona politicians. Love them. Gotta love them. Anyway, but you know what? I kind of like the executives who are like that because they – well, you know, it's my position in the studio now at Paramount right now. I like that. It's completely mercenary. Look, if you are making us money like – you know what, Johnny Depp? Hey, we will be nice to you and you are welcome to come. Come on in. If you are not, just learn your lines, do the thing, and get out. And that's all. We'll give you some snacks and leave. So, you know, the fact is actors don't ride in the golf carts that you see. They don't. They don't get to, no, actors don't get ridden around in golf carts. People are important. People who are important, they ride the golf carts. I'll tell you who. Producers. And their assistants to the producers and people who, you know, are delivering shrubbery, things like, you know, important people, but not actors. Let me tell you, actors walk a long way because they're actors and you're kind of the bottom of the totem pole. You are. Years ago, I was a kid just coming out here and auditioning for a commercial. And it was one of those commercials where whatever, you know, shampoo. And the grandson and the granddad are together. And the grandfather, well, Jimmy, your hair looks awfully smooth and conditioned. What's your secret? So, and you would get paired up with an older man, you know, the young guys. So me and a bunch of the young guys, and we're joking around because, oh, all our futures are set. We're all going to be international superstars. And all the old guys are sitting on the other side of the room, and they're swapping a couple stories, but they've been through this before. And one of the older men went into the room, spent a couple minutes in there, but the door creaked open slowly when he came back out. Clearly it didn't go well. His head was hanging down. The man must have been in his 70s. And he comes up to a group of us young guys. And he looks at us and just says, I am so tired of begging for work. And then he just walks away. And out the casting office door. And we're all staring at each other like, gulp. I hope that's not me. But hey, that's it. Look, that's an actor's life. It's an actor's life. If you're incredibly fortunate, as I have been, your career is basically a sporadic series of very temporary odd jobs. And this week's odd job is a secret, but involves Scott Baio. So, you know, so many actors' advice to young hopeful actors is don't do it. Every acting class I ever took, whatever professional actor was there, well, what is your recommendation to anybody? Don't do it. And I never say don't do it. I don't. I say do it. I do. But you have to understand what you're getting into. Because to me, I think it's worth it. I think there's nothing that can compare with the stuff that I've done, with being a VIP sort of at Disney World twice and getting snacks for free and watching Cinderella get electrocuted in front of your kids. All gravy.
It's the Big Pop Fun Man, Tom Wilson.
It's time for Tom to sing a song, though it might not be that strong, but he doesn't really care, he'll do it. If you don't want to hear it, just fast forward through it. Buzz the bunny loved onomatopoeia. Thump and splash and thud and plop, he ran around all day. The other bunnies would laugh and stare, but Buzz the bunny didn't care. Boink, he'd turn and flash, he'd run away. Zap, zing, zip, zoom, whack, wham, whiz, boom. He'd crunch and rustle, clang and bash through the bunny hiding places. Buzz would just say, see ya. I dig living life in automatopoeia. Then crash, bang, doink, he'd leave them all with awestruck bunny faces. That's Buzz. One day they put a new highway in where all the hoppin' bunnies lived. Buzz was never rattled. He could make those cars go screech. He raced across one sunny day atop the shiny new highway. Never heard the truck that blasted honk, splat, ooh. Eek! The other bunny screamed, squish, an ugly bunny seen. Crunch and flap and crash and pop. Buzz landed hard, kerplop. But ding, he raised up from the dead. Ha, in your face, he said. Then Buzz the onomatopoeic bunny ran away. Well, thanks so much for stopping by the Big Pop Fun Ranch. Hey, if you hung in there through a song about a rabbit that liked onomatopoeia, congratulations or I'm sorry. You're just a glutton for punishment. Those are the kind of things that go on inside my head. So I just write them down. And as you can see, as I talked about before in the solo podcast today, I think I'm great at writing somewhat clever songs that no one wants to listen to. But except a few, because I've tried that in a nightclub environment, and people cock their heads and look at me confusedly like a Scottish terrier on a sitcom. Anyway, thanks so much. I appreciate it. And thanks to Emily Wilson for producing. Thanks to Chris, Katie, everybody at Nerdist Industries. Thanks to McPherson Guitars for helping me out on the live show. I'm all over the place this very weekend. I'm in Peoria, Illinois at the Jukebox Comedy Club. So come on out and say hello and say tell me that you listen to the podcast. But I will talk to you next time. Thanks so much. Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.